It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, off and running on this, the ninth day of August 2022. It is, well, it feels like it might be getting up to the dog days of August and those tongue-lolling, kind of hot, muggy, yeah. Because, well, here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, it's every bit of, well, 84 degrees. You'll have those sometimes. We are apparently streaming on all cylinders and platforms. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for that 999. Yeah. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Titanic Tuesday, so we will be taking note of some Titanic right-wing intellect this afternoon. Oh my, very goodness gracious, don't we just have some? Oh yes, we do. We do. But every program at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, so we say thank you. Profound thanks to our ninth day of the month subscribers over at PayPal. That means thank you to Mary Bell, and thank you to James, thank you to Khalil, thank you, Ralphs. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program. Fundraising goal is at $930. $930. It's Tuesday, so that means... No. $900. We've got Friday, Monday, and today to take care of as we try to keep this little... fragile independent broadcast effort on the air. I wish there was some other way to do this than by talking about it constantly, because, well, it does take away from the program. I acknowledge that. I know that. I hate doing it, but here we are. So, yeah, if we could knock down some portion of that, that would be great, because, you know, it's a constant struggle to pay the bills, like I always talk about. It can't be helped. God knows, if I was to win the lottery, all the fundraising would go away. But I don't play the lottery, so that's going to be kind of hard for me to win it. Yeah, right? But that being what it is, the fundraising goal's at $900. There's a challenge on the table carried over from yesterday. It's the, oh my God, 500,000 Podbean downloads challenge, courtesy of Ralphs. And that would get us down below the, get us down to 800 and, well, yeah, $850 in fundraising, and that would be awfully helpful. Program note. I'm waiting to find out if it's the case, but I may be away from the microphone tomorrow. Ferg quite possibly has a job interview that, driving a vehicle that gets 15 miles a gallon to get to is probably not the best thing and the smartest thing in the world, so I'll take him. It involves going over to a city called Marysville in a state that used to be called the Buckeye State. That's, remember, that's our compromise for me not saying Ohio. I now think of it as Ohio-Bama or Alahio, because that state gets a little more like Talibama every blessed day because of the rampant right-wingery and vicious, vehement, vituperative, let's work with V words today, right-wing hatred that flows out of that state legislature. And if that's the case, I'm sure I'll not be back in time. But no, he's got an interview at the Honda plant, possible, and that would be a great job if he could get it. And so I told him, yeah, I'll take you. We haven't had a road trip together in a very long time. And I'm not even sure how long it would take to get over there to Alahio or Columbama, Ohio-Bama. I don't know. But, you know, if I'm live tomorrow, you'll know I didn't have to go. And if it's a rerun, you'll know I'm probably on my way back from Marysville, which I take it is somewhere northwest of Columbamus. I mean, it's, in a way, it's better than calling it Columbus because, you know, yay, naming your capital city after a genocidal maniac. Whee! Right? Yeah. But, so, that's, you know, like I said, program note. And, of course, this is the day after, this is the day after the great search warrant service down at Mar-a-Lardass. One of the funniest things I've seen so far today is Barron Trump to FBI, not even looking up from his Xbox. Safe's back there. Matt in San Francisco said, you know, I think I have PTSD, post-Trump traumatic stress syndrome disorder. I learned about the FBI raid at Mar-a-Lardass. I thought, and I wonder which investigation it's related to. This Trump criminal stuff is just never ending. It seems this chapter will remain open even after 45 goes to his long home where he gets to sit next to Jeebus. Shh, he's not going to sit next to Jeebus. Probably sit next to Rush. Or Neil, as the case may be. I really wish that banishment was still a thing. I look forward to a day I don't have to hear about the leader of the beer belly putsch. Oh, Lord, Matt, I know. I know. But, you know, here we are. Flavio says, the parodies are out already. The FBI raided by the founders sing. Let's see what this is all about. As soon as the ad's over. Wait, wrong one. Oh, you know what? It works a lot better if it's plugged up. Let's go to a different platform right now. Sometimes. I need a producer. But it's been it was all over the news all night long and well into the morning. And I guess it's a new, what would we say? This is a new purity test for the maggot party? Because some of the quotes are absolutely delightful. Ah, here we go now. The FBI raided a Founders Sing parody. Oh, goody.
There they are, breaking down the golden doors of Mar-a-Lago. And here I am, wondering what's inside that safe that they broke into. Will they nail me with solid evidence? Will they lock me up before I run again? Upside down like a house of cards. Thought I got away with all my crimes until today. Now my underwear's everywhere, and the balls I thought were brass are all deflated. My golf game got interrupted by the call about those damn boxes. I'm the fool who should have had the sense to flush or burn those papers. If I'm indicted, will they still believe my lies? Don't wanna serve hard time. Can I flee to Mexico? The FBI raided, turned my palace upside down like a house of cards. Thought I got away with all my crimes until today. Now my underwear's everywhere, and the balls I thought were brass are all deflated. The FBI raided, turned my palace upside down like a house of cards. Thought I got away with all my crimes until today. Now my underwear everywhere, and the balls I thought were brass are all deflated. All deflated.
Everybody's saying, or, you know, don't, because it's over now. Oh, yeah. Marapuco raid. Our buddy Gary Laborman out in New Mexico says, Repuclicon heads just exploding. Love it. Oh, it's hard not to, and if they can do it to to the former president of the United States, imagine what they can do to you. I mean, isn't that kind of supposed to be how it works? That when the former president of the United States violates the law all over the place, that, yeah, upon suspicion thereof and upon a search warrant appropriately filed and sworn to, that they can go and look. I mean, you got to wonder if maybe we don't know what's behind this necessarily, at least not in fullness. You think maybe anybody asked him to give it back? No, it's mine. It's definitely mine. You can't have it back. Makes you wonder which part, what it was that he put down the toilet, doesn't it? And the speculation has been hot and fast and furious today. Naturally. They reached out, CNN did, to John Dean, he of Watergate fame, who offered up some interesting speculation.
The man who understands presidential scandal quite well, the former Nixon White House counsel, John Dean. John, you know, Trump likes to make historical comparisons. He likes to play victim. But on the facts here, he's flat out wrong, right?
He doesn't understand what happened during Watergate. Or he's just trying to distort what happened at his home. And it doesn't work at all, the analogy.
And so walk me through your thoughts. You know, you get interviewed all the time about your days in Nixon. You're also, you know, you're a former White House counsel. You're a pretty smart legal mind. That the FBI and that the Attorney General would sign off on a warrant for the former president of the United States to go search his residence in Florida. What does that tell you about the state of this investigation?
What it tells me, John, is that they were cooperating, but somehow Trump cut them off and did something that provoked this action. They obviously are very aware of what he has. They may have an inside source that sees some abuse of that
material.
Pay
attention to that part.
So
they may have an inside source.
They had to take an extraordinary action to protect the national security documents, and that appears what this is. The NARA, the National Archives, is very aggressive with this sort of thing. I know a former Nixon White House aide who happened to not get all his papers turned in, later cooperated with a journalist on a book. Next morning, the FBI was at his door, and it was not a friendly visit. So this is something they're very concerned about, that national security information and presidential records are not where they should be.
So take us back through your experience and connect the dots where you can and make important distinctions maybe where you cannot, in the sense that the investigation of Nixon, you know, took quite a long time. There was testimony like yours. There were tapes that were ultimately turned up. There were documents. But the building blocks of that took some time. When you're watching this play out today, what seems familiar and what's different?
Well, when my first reaction when I heard about search warrant, that I figured, which investigation is this that they think they have documents? It wasn't until later, and actually in Trump's response when he said Hillary Clinton got away with her emails, well, I said, that means he's dealing with documents that are missing and he hasn't turned in or something of that nature. So, yes, this has been in months in development. You've got an agency that's very protective of its documents and wants them and wants to. This is a perfect example to make a point that not even a former president can walk off with classified documents. If you recall, Sandy Berger, who was Bill Clinton's national security advisor, went out and tried to take some documents from the National Archives. And he got a
really a Clinton reference.
It,
really,
he got a heavy fine. The judge fined him $50,000 and really scolded him because it was a stupid thing he did. So this is something that is aggressively pursued. It appears to be separate from Trump's many other problems. But while they were there and serving that subpoena, if they saw anything related to his involvement in the overturn of the election, they could take that. So we don't know, and what Trump should do is turn over and open up the warrant and let us all see what they wanted.
It would be great to see what they wanted. I'm sure that the Justice Department, they want to wait till they get to the key point in the investigation. Before I let you go, just an observation. It's hard for me to believe. I don't know whether to call it irony or what, that we're having this conversation 48 years to the day of Richard Nixon leaving the White House. 48 years ago in this hour, Gerald Ford being sworn in as President of the United States. What goes through your mind?
Well, who would have thought that we'd have a president that is more troublesome than Richard Nixon? I never dreamed that someone would make him look like a choir boy. But here we are. And we've got he looks awfully good today, as opposed to the problems we got with Trump.
And you know why that is? Because in the wake of Richard Nixon, we did not forever bury the Republican Party. And you know, by we, I mean the American people. I was just a kid, 11 years old, 1974. And, you know, look at us. Oh, we've rooted out corruption in the federal government. And from August 9th, 1974 to January 20th, 1981, and Ronald Reagan and the single most corrupt presidential administration that we had until then known, yes, even more corrupt than Nixon. Not quite 7 years. History's a thing, you know. No, but there he was, waving bye-bye from the helicopter. Well, you won't have Richard Nixon to kick around anymore. Yeah. But the point is, I think the most central point of all of that is that somebody on the inside is apparently talking, either intentionally or So also at CNN, you get a conversation regarding just exactly who that might have been that gave the FBI reason to seek a search warrant.
This was a search. This was a legally executed search as per the Fourth Amendment. What? Probable cause that a crime has or will be committed. Therefore, as previously stated, Attorney General signed off, layers and layers of FBI General Counsel, as well as Department of Justice General Counsel, and an appointed federal magistrate signed off on this to allow the FBI to conduct a search to prove or disprove that a crime has or will be committed with regard to classified documents.
So let's dig in. There's a lot we don't know, and it's important to say that. There's a lot we don't know, and Donald Trump is innocent until proven guilty. But let's dig into what we do know, including Donald Trump was in New York. He was at the Trump Tower in New York as this was playing out in Mar-a-Lago. But his son, Eric, was there. Here's some of his description.
The purpose of the raid, from what they said, was because the National Archives wanted to, you know, corroborate whether or not Donald Trump had any documents in his possession. And my father has worked so collaboratively with them for months.
Kalen Poland says it's the last part from Eric Trump. He says his father has worked with them collaboratively for months. This dispute over these documents goes back to a couple months after Donald Trump left office, back to May of 2021. A little more than a month ago, you had agents actually at Mar-a-Lago and the former president stopped by that conversation. They were trying to get documents back. What got to the point after months and months and months of trying to negotiate this that the FBI decided we are in an impasse, we need a search warrant?
I mean, John, that really is the question. We just don't know so much about this, but we do know what this investigation was. Initially, it was the National Archives being very concerned about these documents that the Trump people had after the presidency at Mar-a-Lago. And what's interesting about this is that we have talked before about 15 boxes at Mar-a-Lago. Those boxes, as far as we know, those were recovered previously by the National Archives and then subpoenaed by the Justice Department as part of this same criminal probe, if it is the one that Eric Trump is referring to there.
Eric.
And so those documents now, they already had in their possession, and at some point they realized in that June meeting that there was more there. It appears they were shown by the Trump lawyers on site. You know, there are things here. And the Justice Department came back and said, keep those secure. We just don't know what happened after that. If they came back and said again, you know, we want to come in, or if this was a total surprise to everyone and that they were just really taken off guard.
Which is what gets you to the unprecedented part of this. And we'll get to the politics of this in a moment. I want to stick to what we know at the moment. But so if you're the FBI team investigating this and you've had these months of back and forth and then you decide, OK, we need to go to the boss. We're not making progress. We need to ask for a warrant. That has to go up the chain of command to Chris Wray, appointed by Donald Trump to be the FBI director. Then that has to go up the chain in the Justice Department, presumably all the way to Merrick Garland, the former federal judge, known as a very cautious guy, appointed by Joe Biden. Listen here to Preet Bharara, the former U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of New York, saying to make probable cause, they needed some evidence there was a crime being committed. And to get that evidence, where'd it come from?
They must have some close in time percipient witness who can show the judge in an affidavit that the documents are still there, that there's evidence of misconduct up to and including the former president of the United States. You don't take this kind of action lightly.
If you look at what we've learned from the January 6th hearings, it is people very close who had constant eyes on Donald Trump who have provided the most damning testimony about his conduct from Election Day through the insurrection and beyond. Preet is suggesting there that to get this warrant, the FBI must have some inside information that it could not trust what was being done with the custody of those documents.
And that's the major question here of what documents were left over that were not returned back to the National Archives when those 15 boxes that we believed did go back to the National Archives went back. And so that's the big question here. The president's attorneys showed investigators several months ago at Mar-a-Lago where these documents were being stored. It was in the basement of Mar-a-Lago. They took them down there. I'm told that the investigators looked around the room. Then they left. They did not take the boxes with them.
you wait, a basement in South Florida? I mean, hell, climate change alone could constitute a national security risk in that regard. You know, flooding, hurricanes, it is hurricane season. I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, but gee, thanks, Eric. Daddy's gonna love you to pieces for this. Kevin in Colorado Springs with a question. Classified materials. I wonder if they're very much concerned that Trump might have shared some of this classified material with foreign governments, you know, like Saudi Arabia and Mohammed bin Bonesaw. Yeah, I'm thinking more in terms of Mother Russia. You know, the same people who are now threatening to bomb a nuclear power plant in Ukraine. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of curious. The International Atomic Energy Agency has demanded access to the site. Ukraine says that the Russians are attacking and bombing positions, and the Russians, of course, say, no, it's not us. We would not hurt fly. Is Ukrainians doing crazy Ukrainian things, proving Ukrainian not be trusted? Well, I mean, that was until one of the Russian generals said, there will either be Russian land or a scorched desert where is nuclear power plant. That, by the way, is the largest nuclear power plant in Europe. Anybody bothered by that at all? Oh, yeah, I know. Vlad Putin's just a sweetheart, and yada, 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 yada. So there's some reason, you know, that, what, did he keep copies? 15 boxes they carried out, but he kept copies? Is that it? Or they found out that he had kept copies? By the way, sharing that kind of classified information with a foreign power, especially a hostile one, that's a pretty serious federal crime. And it, of course, it reminds me of something. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Yeah, there it is.
Now, the thing we have to talk about is your unwitting participation in this serious federal crime.
The only part is the unwitting part. I know. Darlene in Connecticut says, are we there yet? Are we there yet? But her emails! But her emails! Benghazi! Aye! Right. Because all day long it's been this, this ridiculous litany of wingnuts falling, maggots falling apart. Of particular interest was a rather vintage tweet from Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags. Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, yeah, otherwise known as Jethreen Bodine, said it was a total abuse of power. Yeah. In 2016, she said, when you're attacking the FBI agents because you're under criminal investigation, you're losing. Of course, back then, it wasn't... the orange skid mark being investigated. No. And bless his heart, over on My Filthy Morning Habit, poor old Joe just about had a plum conniption over it all.
The search is prompting these reactions from some of Trump's fiercest supporters. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is accusing the DOJ of becoming politicized and vows to investigate. Attorney General Merrick Garland tweeting, Attorney General Garland, and this is the delicious part, preserve your documents and clear your calendar. That's interesting. That's interesting because the Secret Service did not preserve their documents surrounding January 6th. It appears the members of the Department of Defense preserve their documents. And the whole point of what happened at Mar-a-Lago yesterday was about documents, but okay. Similarly, Texas Senator Ted Cruz is blasting the Biden administration for using the FBI to target their political enemies. And former White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's now running for Arkansas governor, also writes, quote, if you're not yet appalled by the total abuse of power from Democrats in Washington, you're not paying attention. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is not paying attention because the person at the very top of the FBI, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, was put in there by Trump. I'm confused. Go ahead, Joe.
But Mika, those same people didn't take issue when the FBI was investigating somebody they considered to be a political enemy. Hillary Clinton, in October of 2016, just 11 days before the presidential election, then FBI Director James Comey announced he was going to reopen an investigation into emails sent by Hillary Clinton using a private server over this classified document issue. And Kevin McCarthy, at that time, attacked Hillary Clinton for her, quote, lack of judgment and disregard for protecting our nation's secrets. And, you know, he didn't criticize the FBI. You know, Cruz also railed against Clinton, writing things like elected officials should be held accountable for criminal conduct, no matter how high their position. And, of course, there couldn't be greater hypocrisy, I don't think, than Sarah Sanders, who in 2016, and I know you remember this hit, Mika, she wrote, when you're attacking the FBI agents because you're under criminal investigation, you're losing. Gene Robinson, of course, the hypocrisy is just, it's laughable how hypocritical these people are.
Yeah, it's as if they're trying to outdo themselves with hypocrisy every day. So, you know, we shouldn't be surprised at this great leap that they're taking, after her emails. And look, this is in many ways, I was just thinking about what John Heilman just said. I mean, in many ways, this is the simplest of the legal or potential legal cases against Donald Trump, because it's a matter of stolen property. The presidential documents belong to me. They belong to you. They belong to Mika. They belong to the American people. They do not belong to the former president. And what the FBI did after trying to get the stolen property back over a period of months is go in to Mar-a-Lago to retrieve stolen property. Property belongs to us and does not belong to him. And it's pretty simple in terms of what actually happened. And the second thing is, we don't know how serious the potential breach of classification is. We don't know what's in these documents and how, are these top secret documents, are they potentially jeopardizing national security? We don't know that, but we assume, and I would assume at least, if a judge is willing to sign off on the search warrant, it's pretty serious. If Merrick Garland is willing to sign off on it, it's pretty serious. So so we'll have to wait and see on all of that. But it's basically simple at its base. He stole this stuff, and the FBI went to get it back.
not exactly complicated when you hear it that way, is it? No. Now, of course, Eugene Robinson writes for the Washington Post, and they had their own take on it earlier today, and this is definitely a Titanic Tuesday nomination. I don't have a Washington Post subscription, but I've read it, I read it in a news aggregator, and I screenshotted the particular portion of the story that kind of got all over me like fire ants. You know, Nitwit Nero started tweeting about it. He wasn't there. But he said it's dark times for our country. Dark times. Never mind the multiple layers of judicial machinery the application for search warrant went through. And, you know, as Morning Mika pointed out, never mind the fact that the FBI director who signed off on it was Nitwit Nero's own choice to head the FBI. But leave it to the multimillionaire for-profit media to screw this up. Trump was at Trump Tower in New York on Monday with limited staff, according to three advisors, and learned of the search only after the FBI was at the property. One advisor who spoke to him said, the advisor spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe private interactions. This, of course, has probably occasioned a matter of him raging around his hillbilly high-rise, bringing, who's the leaker? Who talked to them? I want to know! Who's disloyal? What about the strawberries? Okay. And then there was the interesting language that was used in the coverage earlier today. Namely, the Secret Service provided access to the FBI, although they did not assist in the search. I found it passing curious that that winds up in the official copy for various accounts of what happened, and in particular because it suddenly dawned on me that in years past, I don't know exactly where it would have been, maybe Brother Deacon Asa, who seems to be sort of the horn archivist in many ways, knowing when things were said and what was talked about, but there was a time when we actually discussed the potential arrest of the President of the United States, who at that time was, of course, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. And we talked about the interplay between the FBI and the Secret Service, and lo and behold, there it was. It kind of came true yesterday. And so the Secret Service didn't reach for their guns or anything. Of course, Nitwit Nero wasn't there. Kind of makes you wonder why the Secret Service was. I thought they were supposed to... because he keeps Secret Service there and bills them the maximum daily rate for staying at that miserable, shitty, bedbug-infested pile of bricks. Never mind. But they went, you've got to search for... come on in! Because they weren't quite ready to get into a gun battle with the FBI over boxes of stolen documents. And the Secret Service has kind of got a black eye lately, so maybe that played into it as well. But it was the next paragraph in the Washington Post story, which ordinarily would be a paragraph that was rather anodyne, but in the course of reading it, I just sort of sat there and shook my little head, and really? And this is that paragraph. Democrats, who had twice impeached Trump, but failed both times to convict him, welcomed the news of the raid. Some cheered that there was enough evidence against the former president for a court-approved search warrant of his private property. Oh, that's beautiful. Somebody just posted to my Facebook page a picture from the Star Trek Next Generation, Mar-a-Lago, when the safe was opened. Darmok and Jalad at Mar-a-Lardass. I gotta love that. But it's that paragraph that got... And it was... Democrats who had twice impeached Trump but failed both times to convict him welcomed the news of the raid. Well, that's not even remotely accurate now, is it? And not even remotely. Yes, the House of Representatives, which had a has a Democratic majority, did impeach him twice. But this is the Washington Post, for God's sakes. This is the paper of record for the nation's capital. Does anybody actually have a job reading this crap before it goes to print? Because that passage really is crap. When an impeachment takes place, and granted, this is civics, and we've been over this, the House, under the constitutional framework, has the power of impeachment. And on two separate occasions, the House of Representatives presented evidence and voted on bills of impeachment and did, in fact, impeach the President of the United States. He stands as the only twice impeached president of the United States. He will never not be the twice impeached president of the United States. You know, get all kind of biblical and so let it be written, so let it be done. But it's that snarky little quip about, but failed both times to convict him. Well, Democrats didn't try him in the Senate. The Constitution of the United States makes abundantly clear that the Senate as a whole tries the President of the United States upon a case of impeachment and upon other impeachments as well. And that conviction, of course, requires a two-thirds vote of the Senate. Well, in the case of, let's deal with the second impeachment. There were two members of the Senate who were Republicans who voted to convict. So that it was 52-48, and the conviction, well, he was acquitted. But it was not Democrats who failed to convict him. Every Democrat voted to convict Donald Trump because every Democrat actually looked at the evidence, weighed the evidence, and then based upon that evidence, voted to convict him and remove him from office and make him ineligible ever to run for elected office again. Maybe I'm putting too fine a point on it. But I don't think I am. He would have been convicted and removed from office, not based upon the failed actions of any Democrats, but because the Republican Party had become and remains to this day a captive cult of personality of Donald J. Trump. And the J, of course, stands for, I was just keeping those boxes in my basement for sentimental value. It was Republican senators who shat all over their oaths who refused to convict. Some of those Republican senators even said in their remarks that what had been charged had been proven, and because I remember talking about this, but then said, yeah, but. I don't think that's an impeachable offense. Well, that was a case of a senator going outside the bounds of his charge relative to how the Constitution defines impeachment. Whether or not it is an impeachable offense is determined by the House of Representatives, whether it's consensual oral sex on the part of Bill Clinton, or an illegal shakedown by Donald Trump of the nation of Ukraine, or fomenting a seditious terrorist insurrection, a putsch, against constitutional governance in the United States of America. And so I couldn't help wondering, you know, how many people actually read that story and went, yeah,
if only the Democrats would have succeeded in impeaching him.
That's not even remotely how it happened. Am I getting this wrong? I mean, that's not a rhetorical question. Every one of those senators who voted to acquit him basically told the world that their oath to the Constitution of the United States did not mean, and this is a complicated legal term, dick. So, I mean, you know, kind of shame on them. Yeah, meanwhile, Nitwit Nero is fundraising off his own arrest, search warrant.
Break my
subject line.
My beautiful home was raided. These are dark times for our nation as my beautiful home, Mar-a-Lardass in Palm Beach, Florida, was raided and occupied by a large group of FBI agents.
Occupied? No, really, occupied. Maybe they're still there. Maybe there's a green zone in Mar-a-Lardass now.
Nothing like this has ever happened to a president of the United States before.
Well, that's because a president of the United States has never stolen classified documents and tried to keep them in the basement of his bedbug-infested pile of bricks.
And it's important that you know that it wasn't just my home that was violated. It was the home of every patriotic American who I've been fighting for since that iconic moment I came down the golden escalators in 2015.
So, if you're kind of glad that maybe the rule of law might be properly operating finally...
You're not a patriotic American. The home of every patriotic American.
Can't you just see Emory and Marvelline looking at each other? Marvelline, load up the family truckster. We're going to bust on out of this holler and we're going to go down to our new home. Mar-a-Lardass. Because our great and glorious president has said it is our home, too, because, Marvelline, we're patriotic Americans. Yes, let's go, Emory.
I stood up to the radical left's corruption. I restored power to the people and truly delivered for our country like we have never seen before. The establishment hated it. Now as they watch my endorsed candidates win big victories and see my dominance in all polls, they're trying to stop the Republican Party and me once more. The lawlessness, political persecution, and witch hunt must be exposed and stopped. As long as I have your support, I will continue to fight for the great American people.
Make some sense. Do the great American people go to the great American ballpark or something? What?
I need every single red-blooded American patriot to step up during this time. Please rush in a donation immediately to publicly stand with me against this never-ending witch hunt.
And then there's a bullshit animation of people who have allegedly donated Only it just loops back, it loops over and over again. Sarah T. Where's Sarah T. from? North Carolina. Mark L. in Illinois. Ross N. of Alabama. Oh, my goodness gracious. Look at the money just rolling in.
Thank you, Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States.
Lee in New York points out that occupied, you know, the proper term for where he flushes documents down the toilet.
Ocupado.
Emilio asks, did the FBI leave the anarchist squatters logo on Mara Dumbass? One wishes. Subject line, creep. Jeremy in Vermont. The orange monster tried to fundraise off his then-dead ex-wife as late as last week. Also last week, he sent out a mass text which had a link that said something like,
your ultra-mega-super subscription is overdue. Click now to donate.
Won't be long before he's offering up a free canister of the powdered paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverage.
My good friend, Alex Jones, has made this available only to true great American patriots.
And, you know, yesterday evening I had a note from Steve in Ottawa, recently of New York, who observed Mar-a-Lago FBI, Alex Jones's texts, photos of docs flushed, FBI raid, something's heating up. I wish we could just run it up to boiling right now. Oh, and speaking of Alex Jones, well, news out today. According to CNN, that lawyer Mark Bankston, counsel for the Sandy Hook parents, has handed over about 2 years' worth of text messages sent and received by Alex Jones. We don't know when they were turned over, just that they were. So I'm guessing that's going to have to be an entire separate and distinct episode in the ongoing blockbuster summer hit, Insurrection. And it's all well and good that we talk about, you know, your Kevin McCarthy's and
preserve your documents. Clear your calendar.
Well, you know, America, if you don't want to waste a hell of a lot of money investigating something that is actually kind of routine. It was nothing special. This was just another application for a search warrant against just another potentially criminal defendant. Then you do well to keep Kevers from ever getting his hands on the levers of power. Just seems like a good idea to me. But there's stupid, and then there's insurrection is stupid. And what I mean by that, y'all, they're going to do it again. When the news came out, according to Carolyn Orr Bueno, PhD, also known as RVA Wonk, Trump supporters are really excited about the idea of civil war. Some of the responses to today's FBI raid, I already bought my ammo.
Civil War, pick up arms, people. Civil War 2.0 just kicked off. Let's do the war. One step closer to a kinetic civil war. Because somebody taught him a big word. Kinetic. No, not Connecticut. Kinetic. Let's see. Let's go through a few of these.
Is this the first shot of a civil war? Is this the tyranny mentioned in the Second Amendment? The Founding Fathers would have started shooting a long time ago. Any doubt?
Frankly, lots of it.
A civil war is coming after what the DOJ did today. Everybody watching the news, the American Civil War 2.0 just kicked off.
Is it just me or the Democrats pushing the envelope on a civil war? I got my bullet, Andy! The illegitimate regime FBI raids the home of its leading political opponent, Mar-a-Lago. They are provoking a civil war.
August 8th, 2022 will be remembered forever. The start of Civil War II. Breaking, President Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago was raided today by the FBI. They really are pushing us toward a civil war, aren't they? This will not go well.
Well, no, for the insurrectionists, it will not go well. And maybe this time, instead of trying to push them back and keep them out of the Capitol, now that we know how they were gunned up for January 6th, we'll be more appropriately equipped. Matt Schlapp.
I urge MAGA and conservatives to be outraged. We have to defend the country and the Constitution from this coup. But it starts with channeling the anger into firing every socialist at every level of you. Oh, shut up.
And then there was the demon dentist of the desert, Paul Gozer. There's only Zool.
I will support a complete dismantling and elimination of the Democrat brown shirts known as the FBI. This is too much for our republic to withstand.
Someone responding saying, here comes Civil War 2.0.
Well, get out there, Meal Team 6.
Raise the Bonnie Blue flag. Oh, look, Charlie Kirk. The FBI just completed an unannounced raid of President Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago. No, they served a search warrant, dumbass. America is devolving into a third world nation, and this latest escalation by Merrick Garland and the Biden regime should shock every single American, regardless of who you voted for in 2020. Wow!
Tell me you know nothing about the Constitution of the United States without saying I know nothing of the Constitution of the United States. Somebody who calls herself Patriot Girl. Kind of flinging that around a little bit, aren't you, hon?
It's time for a civil war. The deep state has proven they are real, they are corrupt, and they are dictators.
Charlie Kirk again.
We've invaded nations and toppled dictators for less than what our own FBI is doing right now.
Really? Have we? I don't think we have.
Why do we put up with blatant third world thuggery from a man who can't even put on a jacket without his wife's help?
What, Edith, huh?
Patriot Girl, who apparently follows Charlie Kirk everywhere he goes, says,
Civil War! Pick up ammo, people!
The FBI just declared war on the Republic. Treat them accordingly.
using the FBI as a personal political police force will be one of the root causes of another American Civil War.
I know. Hey, look, says Scott in San Diego. What did the FBI find in Trump's safe? A, Mitch McConnell's testicles. B, Lindsey Graham's collection of little boys' underwear. Underoos, yay. C, a copy of the P-tape. D, love notes from Putin. E, all of the above. You know, I'm guessing, because it's a multiple guess test, but I'm guessing it's E. Lee in New York says, the billionaire needs donations, and the fools give. Kevin in Colorado Springs says, waiting for the sequel. First there was Occupy Wall Street, then the FBI gave us Occupy Mar-a-Lago. So now I'm waiting the sequel, Occupy That Damn Jail Cell, Donald Trump. Good one, Kevin. Robin needs to write a novel, Emilio says. 50 Shades of Stupid. Worst sequel ever, Civil War 2.0. I agree, Lee. These dumbasses have no idea what they're talking about or what they say they want. Oh, look, there's Marco Rubio. After today's raid on Mar-a-Lago, what do you think the left plans to use those 87,000 new IRS agents for? Somebody responds, Civil War 2.0 coming? And it's going to be led by 87,000 new IRS agents? Oh, I mean, every weird-ass, right-wing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, etc. Brian Kilmeade over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda just spoke to Eric Trump, nothing in the safe, FBI agents 30 approximately raided on behalf of National Archives. This is outrageous. Has to have come from POTUS and from someone in White House. Dems keep shooting themselves in the foot. Watch the campaign dollars roll in now. Hell, we may get our civil war that we've needed since FDR. Our civil war that we have needed since FDR. FDR died, of course, in the midst of World War II. And there's somebody that thinks the nation should have torn itself apart instead of defeating global fascism. I mean, that's a hell of a hot take, isn't it? The House Judiciary Committee of the GOP. Well, they were the ones who said,
if they can do it to a former president, imagine what they can do to you.
And there was Patriot Girl again. She's had a very long night. What is the GOP doing about this? Nothing. Civil War, people! That's the answer. Do they have any idea what it is they say they want? I mean, that's some sickness. The IRS now has $80 billion, 87,000 new agents, and have bought 4,000 guns and 5 million rounds. Not normal. You gotta wonder what it's like living in those bell jars at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium. That's O-D-D-I-T-O-R, yeah. Just wow. They're pulling out the big guns now. This is how you start a civil war. I'm thinking they might do this on purpose to start something, or are they just incompetent? I mean, it's a hot mess. The NRA posted a picture of Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas with only the words,
shall not be infringed.
Well, to be fair, the NRA has been the primary source of the weaponization of the United States of America, and in fact, a long-standing stochastic terrorist call for civil war in this country. That NRA tweet with Slappy on it,
shall not be infringed,
adds a quote from Slappy.
The constitutional right to bear arms in public for self-defense is not a second-class right.
Well, there are no second-class rights. You either have rights or you don't. Over half of the population found that out, Slappy, at the end of June. God bless Representative Eric Swalwell, though. He said, Donald Trump has a copy of the search warrant. He'd show us the warrant if he were so wronged. Show it or shut it. That's a great point.
What's he trying to hide?
What do you think? Matt in San Francisco. FBI agent quoted after opening safe. Let's see what's behind the Happy Meal box. I don't even want to think about that. Ralph's pointing out, those 87,000 IRS agents are going through Trump's tax returns that they took from Mar-a-Lago. And Ron and Raleigh, subject line, please, who will rid me of this troublesome ex-president? He'll be running this tiresome grift until the day he or I are dead. Well, I certainly want you to live a long, long, happy and healthy life, Ron. So, has there ever been a Titanic Tuesday quite like this one? Because I don't feel like there has been. The question is, how can the for-profit media work a little harder to make this... the simple law enforcement act that it was. Because, I mean, really, it's fairly simple. Then there's the governor of Old Virginia, Glenn Youngkin. The guy who was swept to office on a paranoid wave of fear of library books and critical race theory and potties. He tweeted today,
this same DOJ labeled parents in Loudoun County as terrorists and failed to enforce federal law to protect justices in their homes. Selective, politically motivated actions have no place in our democracy.
Only, no, they didn't label parents in Loudoun County terrorists. They labeled people engaging in terroristic activity as terrorists. Because they were showing up at school board meetings and, you know, threatening to murder people and things like that.
A stunning move by the DOJ and FBI.
No, not particularly. The DOJ pursues, the FBI pursues search warrants probably every day of the year. But then there was Eric Schmidt, one of the Erics, the Eric who actually won the Missouri Republican Senate primary. He's the Attorney General of Missouri, Stan. He said that the raid on Mar-a-Lardass was a raid. Please, see, I'm even... The search warrant. There was no raid. There was no guns out, guns a-blazing. It's like, hi, we got a search warrant.
Oh, okay.
It was an unprecedented weaponization of the DOJ. And went on to say that, by God, when he gets to the Senate, he's going to take a wrecking ball to the FBI. When I'm in the Senate, I'll take a wrecking ball to this overtly political DOJ in the administrative state. Wonder how he's going to do that. Where's he going to do that from? Are they going to boot one of the Republican members off of the Senate Judiciary Committee so he can take a wrecking ball to the FBI? Or is he just going to use his wrecking ball, I don't know, out there in the Building and Grounds Committee? Wrecking ball. Stop watching the Miley Cyrus videos, Eric. Scott in San Diego says, do we know it was the federal judge who authorized the visit a Trump appointee? That'd be fun. Actually, these things tend to go through federal magistrates who are one level down from a U.S. District Court judge. And we do not know. Until we see the warrant, we don't know who issued it. But his niece, Nitwit Nero's niece, Mary Trump, talking to Lawrence O'Donnell last night, she said, you know, they're not breaking it. Let's let her speak for herself.
The line about they even broke into my safe with the exclamation point, for me, is the element in the Donald Trump statement tonight that says the most. He seems shocked by that. This is inconceivable to him. Although this kind of thing couldn't have happened without his lawyers having plenty of hints that this kind of thing was going to come if you continue to resist this investigation or not cooperate in whatever way he was not cooperating.
Sure. And I agree, Lauren. So that was the tell right there, that even though, of course, Donald was informed ahead of time. And first of all, I just wanted to say, if the FBI is has a search warrant, they're not really breaking in. They're just doing their job and getting the information they're entitled to because it's been withheld from them. This is just another example in a very long line of examples of Donald's narcissism and sense of entitlement. He may have been told it was coming, but he could not possibly believe it was coming because it never has. So I think that's where that panic is coming from. And of course, he's also pivoting where he always pivots, to undermining the legitimacy of any investigation into his potential wrongdoing.
How is your uncle going to sleep tonight?
Well, you know, probably as well as he always does, which is to say not well, because, you know, there's been so many things dogging him in the last many years. He was in New York today because he needs to sit for a deposition in another case. So it's all coming sort of fast and furious, and has been for quite some time.
We also learned more today, and this is something that we were going to discuss at greater length tonight, through Peter Baker and Susan Glass's reporting in their new book about Donald Trump's relationship to the military while he was in the White House. But there's this very telling moment about how he thought his relationship with the military should work. This is a passage about that. The president's loud complaints to John Kelly one day was typical. You effing generals, why can't you be like the German generals? Which generals? Kelly asked. The German generals in World War II, Trump responded. You do know that they tried to kill Hitler three times and almost pulled it off, Kelly said. But of course, Trump did not know that. No, no, no. They were totally loyal to him, the president replied. And so, Mary, there's the typical Donald Trump ignorance built into that, having no idea that General Rommel himself was a participant in an attempt to assassinate Hitler, as were others. So there's the ignorance. And then there's this affection, admiration for the way Hitler did it.
Yeah, well, that's something we've known about for a long time. And it just, I think, should remind us that, first of all, Donald has always been contemptuous of service members, but has also put on a pedestal generals and admirals and what have you him. That's what people are for, to be loyal to him, to do his bidding. So that probably came as a bit of a shock. So between that and the ignorance of history you point to, and his clear affection for the autocrat, for the authoritarian, which again is not news. We lay that at the feet of the Republican Party. They knew all of this about him as well. And instead of doing everything in their power to make sure that he did not receive the nomination in 2016, they went all in. So they're completely responsible for the fact that we are in the mess we're in now. So, and I don't think we should let that slide.
My sense of your uncle and his audacity levels is that a man I don't know is that he makes a judgment, this kind of animalistic judgment about just how bold is the other person, and that he can outbold the other person and bold that person into submission. And here I'm thinking about Merrick Garland, and I suspect that Merrick Garland's public aspect, his public demeanor, this kind of bookish man, legal scholar type, very looks like a professor. To Donald Trump, this is a very boring, timid human being. And Donald Trump makes the assessment, this guy is not bold enough to come after me. And so Donald Trump can be surprised today that Merrick Garland sent the FBI right into Donald Trump's home.
Absolutely. I mean, Merrick Garland is the epitome of the kind of man that Donald is contemptuous of, right? So it never occurred to him that Garland would have the intestinal fortitude to, not go after him, to do his job, quite honestly, and hold Donald accountable. So it also serves as a reminder that Donald Trump is a private citizen. And this may be the very first time in his life that he is not protected. So finally, at long last, he is in a position where he too can be served a search warrant by the FBI, thanks to Merrick Garland.
You've watched him get away with things that have offended you your entire life, things just within family exchanges that have nothing to do with anything legal. Then you've also watched him through his businesses and through his political career. How do you feel tonight with this news that his home was raided by the FBI?
I don't want to get ahead of anything, Lawrence. As you know, and many of your guests have said, there's a lot we don't know, but I feel that it is vindicating that finally Donald has been not held accountable so much, but as treated like somebody who is not above the law. That's a long time coming. And again, I think it's a little too early for Schadenfreude, but at least now we know that the playing field is a little more level than it was before tonight.
She's solid. A little more level than it was tonight. And she knows her uncle. It's very easy to imagine her being right and thinking that he sees Merrick Garland as a weak man. Kind of makes you wonder what he thought of Brett Kavanaugh having a breakdown and a crying fit during his confirmation hearings. Oh, wait, and by the way, one thing. You know, we were talking about all the Civil War talk a minute ago. Ben Collins, who has been covering the January 6th insurrection for a very long time, said that the posts on these pro-Trump forums tonight are as violent as I've seen them since before January the 6th. Maybe even more so. Here's some loon called Texas Piper.
He has but to ask us. Don Jr., we know you lurk. Cross the Rubicon.
Someone responding, shit yeah, none of this demonstrating in the snow shit. Summertime was made for killing fields. The fools. The mad fools. And at one point in time, they were grunting as to how Ron monkey up DeKlantis had better send the Florida troopers to stop them federal agents from violating Donald Trump's sacred constitutional rights. Anyway, how about what about old monkey up? You reckon he had any kind of heads up? I mean, he is the governor of the state of Florida and everything. You reckon he heard and... we'll just let this one go through. I mean, I want that maggot vote. I want that maggot money. Then there's Steven Crowder. He has the ear of... he has the ear of many and many a maggot. And last night he tweeted, tomorrow is war. And then this morning he tweeted, today is war. At what point in time does this become incitement, seditious incitement to riot? Anybody? Bueller? And it went on and on and on. God knows if, God help you if you tuned in any of the right-wing cesspit channels. The Washington Post, whom I took issue with a little bit ago, said,
we don't know yet much about what was in the search warrant used to raid Donald Trump's residence at Mar-a-Lago on Monday. We do know that the raid concerned the removal of classified documents from the White House and that, according to Trump, agents raided his safe. But we also quickly found out that a lot of influential people are rather uninterested in any of that, reflexively shouting witch hunt and baselessly blaming President Biden for the raid in a way that bodes very poorly for whatever comes next in this process. Trump has marshaled his army of supporters to declare in knee-jerk fashion any legal scrutiny of him a deep state operation.
You know, and then said that Democrats failed to... Never mind. And then there was, Jim Jacket Off Jordan. He demanded that Merrick Garland and Chris Wray subject themselves to questioning by the Republican Party. You know, I read you that tweet earlier from the House GOP, or the House GOP Judiciary Committee. Well, that gang is led by Jim Jacket Off Jordan. What does that tell you? Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, because it's good ratings, is trying to get Americans, you know, trying to get Meal Team 6 out into the streets. And yeah, here it is, all on the anniversary. The 48th anniversary of a crook exiting the White House. And of course, we've got, we've dealt with all of it. It's a big story. But there is other stuff going on. Like, for instance... Doug Mastriano, the Republican nominee for governor of Pennsylvania. He had agreed to sit down with the January 6th committee and answer questions. And he showed up today. And he lasted every bit of 15 minutes with the committee. Now, even, Mick Mulvaney last week said, listen, when I showed up for my interview, they were professional, they were polite. It was exactly as I expected it to be. They were thorough. And then he tried to throw some shade and said, you know, just because I say that doesn't mean it's fair, or some such shit as that. Well, Doug Mastriano showed up to those polite, professional people and lasted 15 minutes under their withering questioning of things like, what's your name? Doug! No. Because, of course, Doug Mastriano was present. He was an insurrectionist maggot on January 6th. He wanted to record the deposition or wait until after the November election. The House committee said no. And so Mastriano, quote, didn't answer a single question during his video appearance. His lawyer, Tim Parlator, said, we were there for 15 minutes. It was clear that the committee was unable to comply with the regulations regarding the use of deposition authority, and moreover has no interest in complying with the regulations that exist only in Doug Mastriano's head. Now, I added that part. We're happy to provide the information if they can either do it fairly and legally or if we can reach a resolution on how to do a voluntary interview which minimizes the risk of election interference. So, now you hand him a subpoena. You know, it's a lot probably like what went on down at Mar-a-Lardass. You reckon maybe Merrick Garland and Chris Wray and the exalted 32nd degree members of the DOJ, you reckon they why don't we just give a subpoena Dukas, take him to Trump and have him bring it to the grand jury? And then they all broke up in gales of laughter. Oh, hell, he wouldn't. No, get the warrant. And, of course, Mastriano was in constant communication with Nitwit Nero on January the 6th. Mm-hmm. So, time to crank out time to fire up the subpoena machine again. And so here we are at the halfway point of this Titanic Tuesday. We had a $900 fundraising goal. We're trying to get down to $850. If somebody will come up with $25 to match Ralph's $25, that'll get us to $850. We are at goose egg so far. And that's a little depressing. But hopefully, that challenge will be met. Ralph's is itching to pay. But she just needs somebody to show a sign of good faith to begin with. Sooner would be better than later. And, of course, this is Conversation Radio. If you'd like to engage in a little chat about what all we've been talking about, jump in. And, you know, if you've never called the program before, maybe you're new to listening or whatever, you're going to be fine. This is one of the easiest programs to call, I dare say, on the air, right or left. Because it's actually about the conversation. It's not about, well, that's enough about you, let's talk about me. The Flush Flimball model of broadcasting. So maybe try that. In the meantime, we do have, this being a Tuesday, we do have the Green News Report. So let's check and see what Brad and Desi are up to.
It's Tuesday, August 9, 2022.
I am confident the Inflation Reduction Act will endure as one of the defining legislative feats of the 21st century.
Green News Report special coverage. U.S. Senate passes landmark climate legislation.
That landmark and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Our bill reduces inflation, lowers costs, creates millions of good-paying jobs, and is the boldest climate package in U.S. history.
Also, coincidentally, the only climate package in U.S. history. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, snarky, yes, but it's true.
Yes.
This is the only climate package anywhere near this size in U.S. history. And it is a big deal.
Yes, it most definitely is. First, one of the reasons why this bill is so important, Death Valley National Park closed on Friday after getting hit with a year's worth of rainfall in just 3 hours on Friday, triggering flash floods and mudslides that temporarily stranded 1,000 people.
This, unless I'm mistaken, is the 4,000-year flood in the U.S., over the past week and a half.
That's correct. Climate studies confirm that global warming is making torrential rainfall events more frequent and intense, and it is just the latest in a barrage of extreme weather disasters that have plagued the entire Northern Hemisphere this summer. With that barrage unfolding in the background, on Sunday, Senate Democrats passed the Inflation Reduction Act, the landmark climate, health care, tax reform, and deficit reduction bill, the culmination of decades of effort in overcoming the influence of the powerful fossil fuel industry and Republican obstruction. The bill is historic. On climate alone, it contains $370 billion in investments economy-wide to move the nation away from the polluting fossil fuels that cause dangerous man-made climate change and shift the country to clean energy in the largest ever federal effort to address man-made global warming. Multiple independent analyses conclude that the bill's provisions would cut U.S. carbon emissions roughly 40% by 2030, which climate scientists say is critical for us to have a chance at avoiding catastrophic climate impacts.
Good luck.
The sweeping bill is far from perfect. It includes major support for the fossil fuel industry, like expanding public lands and waters available for fossil fuel leasing and subsidies to develop fossil energy carbon capture projects that were required to secure the vote of coal state Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona forced changes to protect billionaires and corporations' profits, but also negotiated $5 billion in additional drought assistance for southwestern states.
Yes, she did. I think you owe her an apology, Desi.
On the plus side, the bill has massive investments and incentives for private industry to manufacture and deploy clean energy, a first-ever fee to force the oil and gas industry to stop methane leaks, a nonprofit green bank to build clean energy projects, subsidies to build a domestic clean energy manufacturing supply chain and boost U.S. clean energy exports. It also has significant funding for households to decarbonize and save consumers money with incentives and grants for electric vehicles, heat pumps, and home weatherization. Billions in investments for low-income communities that bear the brunt of fossil fuel pollution, funding to help farmers decarbonize, and permanent funding for helping coal miners with black lung disease.
Nice, so they don't have to keep voting on that every few years.
Exactly.
And yet, every Republican voted against it. Go figure.
Most environmental groups support the bill as a critical first step, saying much more needs to be done. In a recent broadcast, climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann of Penn State University said while the bill is not ideal, its incentives will accelerate the transition to renewable energy for industry and households.
If the measures to incentivize, to subsidize renewable energy are effective, if the carrot works, it becomes a stick. Which is to say, if we incentivize renewable energy enough, then fossil fuel energy is no longer competitive, and it's too expensive, and they can't get the investments to build. Even if they've been allowed the permitting of these leases and these pipelines, they're not going to be able to get the investments.
That sounds like a delicious carrot.
The rapid spread of renewable energy in the U.S. shows that federal policy shifts do act as accelerants. The bill is headed for a likely quick passage in the Democratic-controlled House. If it passes, it will mark more than 30 years of effort to get to this point. While there is much to complain about in this bill, the alternative to it is not a better bill. It is nothing.
Well said. We'll see if it passes in the House. For much more on this story and all the ones we couldn't get to today because of it, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Waiting for you, it's been a long time coming. I can't keep counting the days. I've been waiting for you. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it's far from perfect, but it is a little something. And I don't know about you, but I'd love to have one of those electric vehicle grants. That'd be just stunningly wonderful. Oh, well, dare to dream. Thank you so much, Kim, in New York. Thank you so very much. Here you go. Love you, says Kim, and meets Ralph's Oh My God 500,000 Podbean Downloads Challenge. Thank you. We are at 850 now. And that $850 means that we're $50 into fundraising for last Friday here on Tuesday. So thank you, Kim. I cannot thank you enough. Love you, too. And maybe you'll get some company as the program continues. I wanted to get to this story. I first saw it yesterday. The terrorizing of marginalized communities. It's almost, if you haven't experienced something like that as part of it, it's hard to really, really understand it on the existential level, that where the existential space that it occupies. And so someone has apparently been going around Albuquerque, New Mexico, shooting Muslim men. All the shootings took place in the same area in the eastern part of Albuquerque. At least three happened within the span of 2 weeks. All of the Muslim men were of South Asian descent. And the Albuquerque police think they may have gotten a suspect. We tracked down the vehicle because the vehicle kept showing up in surveillance footage. We tracked down the vehicle believed to be involved in a recent murder of a Muslim man in Albuquerque. The driver was detained, and he is our primary suspect for the murders. And said there would be a briefing later in the day. I haven't seen anything further. But what a nightmare. They have detained the man. They have charged him. And in a particularly horrifying turn of events, the man they are charging is Muhammad Syed, age 51. The killings have been going on between November 2021 and this month, this year. The Albuquerque police found what they describe as additional evidence that further tied Syed to the murders. Evidence that shows that he knew the victims to one degree or another, and that there may have been some sort of interpersonal conflict. The press release said that detectives connected the homicides using bullet casings found at the scenes. The gun used in those shootings was discovered during the overnight search of his, Syed's, home. Muhammad Ahmadi was killed on November 7th, 2021. Aftab Hussein was killed July 26th. Muhammad Afzal Hussein was killed August 1st. And Naeem Hussein was killed on August 5th, murdered. Good God. Well, Merca, right? Because freedom. Yeah. Everybody got to be able to get a gun. Anyway. Your heart just goes out to the families. But is this the part where we're supposed to say, hey, at least it wasn't some white maggot? I think reading the story, I freely acknowledge bias confirmation. We are at a place and a time where it would not be at all surprising, because it's happened before, that Muslims were targeted by good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians. Think back to the days and weeks and months following September 11th, 2001. God. Hey, thank you. Thank you to our pal, Texas T. Thank you so much. And, thanks as well to Maryville. We are now down to $800 to go in fundraising. That's so helpful. I can't begin to tell you how helpful. And maybe we can finish off Friday. That would be another $200, and we're done with Friday. And again, a reminder, I don't know yet if I'm going to be here tomorrow evening or not, or whether I have to go to Columbama, Ohio. Must be terrible. You know, sorry. I wish that state wasn't becoming more like Alabama. But that seems to be the model for... Well, I mean, that's the Republican model for this country. Make everybody... Make everybody Alabama again. Yeah, Matt in San Francisco says, the guy never heard of therapy, so he killed people he had a conflict with? What the... Yeah. Revenge. Who knows what we'll find out turned out to be the actual motivating factor. And, you know, meanwhile, at least this story isn't a murder. It's a hell of a low bar for the program, but at least it's not a murder. Sometimes you read a story and it's just like, you know, what makes a person this shitty? It's the story of a little kid in Everett, Washington. Little fella, 11 years old, worked in his neighborhood. In the winters, he'd shovel snow for a little bit of money from his neighbors. In the summer, he'd push a mower. And he saved up his money, and then it being summer and everything, he thought he'd do that quintessentially American thing and set up a lemonade stand. And honest to Pete, damned if somebody didn't show up, a dude, with $100 bill and demanded exact change of the little fella. And the kid reached in and got his entire savings from all that snow shoveling, all that lawn mowing, and gave the man change for the $100 bill. Then later, when he went to buy some stuff, the clerk at the store explained to him that the $100 bill was counterfeit, that it was fake, not real.
And I'm proud to live in America.
Never mind. I mean, there's a happy ending to the story. One of the little guy's neighbors set up a GoFundMe for him. The Everett Police Department actually shared his GoFundMe on social media. Because the kid's got ambition. And... He likes doing things like this. So the GoFundMe page raised about $9,000 for him. But what a pity for a little kid, 11 years old, to have to learn such an ugly lesson about human nature. Jesus. It'd be kind of nice if they could find the little bastard. Honestly, who does that? Little guy's name was Jeremy. And, the guy wanted exact change, but Jeremy only had $85, so the guy accepted the $85. And bless the hearts of the people who responded. The neighbor lady who set up his GoFundMe said, he's a hard-working boy between his lemonade stand, which is so much more than just lemonade. If you're ever craving cotton candy, you know who to see. Mowing neighbors' yards and shoveling snow in the winter. He has dreams of owning his own vending machine business in the future. For pity's sakes. And the part, you know, sometimes I don't like how I think when I see stories like this, because I can imagine that there's some Republican out there, you know what, maybe a libertarian.
That kid needs to be taught an economic lesson right early on. It's a hard place out here. People are ruthless in the world of business.
tell me you can't. I mean, a confirmation bias, sure. But tell me you can't imagine that. Because I know. Oh, wow. Steve in Ottawa lets me know that his the young man's GoFundMe is now over $20,000. That might go a long way toward a vending machine company. I wonder how the police are doing trying to track down the thief, the con artist. Any 6'4", 275-pound orange monstrosities been seen wandering around Everett, Washington lately?
I taught him an important business lesson.
Lord God. And from there, out to what they refer to on TV as the greater Chicagoland area. Where the Republican nominee for, Republican candidate for governor, Darren Bailey, who has lately been running around saying things like, well, hell, the Holocaust didn't compare worth... Wrong accent. Didn't compare worth beans to the Holocaust of abortion! There were even some Republicans who heard him talking that filth and said, oh, that's beyond the pale. Well, now he's doubling down, Darren Bailey is. This is the same clown who, when the shooting took place there on July 4th, said, let's have a moment of silence and then get back to politics. Interviewed on WSPY-FM, he said, well, the Jewish community themselves have told me that I'm right. This is largely because the incumbent governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, who's Jewish, has said that abortion rights are a central theme in protecting abortion rights in Illinois, are a central theme of his re-election campaign. And he's been using the 2017 Facebook video burblings of Bailey against him. Back when he was running for the state house there in Springfield, he said, the attempted extermination of the Jews in World War II doesn't even compare on a shadow of the life that has been lost with abortion. So in an effort to downplay it before he doubled down, he said,
the Holocaust is a human tragedy without no parallel. In no way was I attempted to diminish the atrocities of the Holocaust and its stain on his story. I meant to emphasize the tragedy of millions of babies being lost.
So this past weekend, somebody said, well, do you think you owe an apology?
He said, all the people at the cabins...
Which apparently he thinks is how one describes Chabad's. Chabad, a sect within Judaism.
That we met with and the Jewish rabbis.
Because of all the other rabbis.
Well, they said, no, you're actually right. So, no. And what's frustrating, you know, when elected officials copy and paste these messages and turn them into something that they're not, because anybody that would watch my message, the whole 9 minutes of it, would understand exactly what I was saying and where I was going with this.
Yeah, curiously, the Anti-Defamation League Midwest and the Springfield Jewish Federation jumped in and said, no, his remarks are inappropriate, they're deeply offensive, and he does an incredible disservice to the millions of Jews and other innocent victims killed by the Nazis. and Democratic State Representative in Illinois, Bob Morgan of Deerfield, Illinois, chair of the House Jewish Caucus, said, as a member of the Jewish community, Bailey is not right when he belittles the deaths of 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust, including my great-grandparents. Does that make it more clear for you, Bailey? You get the idea that Representative Morgan is not impressed. All the cabbages! Oh, yeah. Cabbages. Cabbages. I hate Illinois Nazis. On the other hand, and by the way, going back to the search warrant at Mar-a-Lardass, at least one fairly well-known Republican is not out there hollering for civil war. Ron Monkey up DeKlantis and Kristi Noem and Glenn Youngkin, whom we've already discussed, they all said it was unprecedented. It was weaponization of federal agency, yada, yada, yada. He went on some program on Sirius XM with somebody I've never heard of called Julie Mason. And Chris Christie said, because remember, Chris Christie was a U.S. attorney before he was the corrupt governor of New Jersey. I said, it was fair game. If the factual underpinnings of the search were true. It would be nice if they could release the application for search warrant and the warrant itself. But I guess we'll have to wait for that. Meanwhile, up in Minnesota, according to a report from the Daily Beast, in Ramsey County, Minnesota, where Derek Chauvin is being held incarcerated for the bloodthirsty murder of George Floyd, the sheriff of that county has imposed a policy that only white people, only white corrections officers can guard, or could guard, because this is back when he was awaiting trial in 2020. Only white officers could guard Derek Chauvin. Today, according to the article, the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners signed off on nearly $1.5 million settlement after officers sued for racial discrimination while working at the Ramsey County Adult Detention Center, a facility run by the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office. The board also officially apologized to the officers Darren Sullivan, Muhammad Salad, Timothy Ivory, Annabelle Herrera, Stanley Hafoka, Nathaniel Gomez Haustein, Cedric Dodds, and Chelsea Cox. And the policy prohibited all non-white correctional officers from interacting with or guarding Chauvin or going anywhere on the fifth floor where Chauvin was to be held. As a result, all officers of color who were assigned in those areas were segregated from Chauvin and reassigned to other locations within the jail. At one point, non-white officers had to stand by during an emergency situation and wait for white officers to arrive because it was in the area they were prohibited from going. Meanwhile, the
superintendent said that the purpose was to minimize the trauma of officers of color.
Isn't that a little bit infantilizing? Derek Chauvin, the horror that keeps on being horrifying. Oh, and let's check in with Rudy Giuliani. What's he been up to? Well, he may be in a little bit of hot water with a judge in Fulton County, Georgia. The same one overseeing the grand jury investigation, or, you know, not overseeing, but, yeah, he's in charge of the grand jury investigation into the attempts to defraud the MAGA attempts, the nitwit Nero attempts to defraud Georgia voters. Giuliani claims that his doctor has ordered him not to fly. The problem is, after claiming he couldn't travel, Giuliani got caught traveling. For instance, to New Hampshire, which he tweeted about with a picture of a young girl sticking her tongue out. Having fun in number 603 with the best entertainment reporter, Conlon Lauren, he tweeted on August the 1st, having traveled from New York City. Giuliani was supposed to be in Atlanta today. And since he can't fly, Judge McBurney said, it's like driving to New Hampshire three times, so just do it in three legs. You know, folks in D.C., and you know folks in D.C., you can stay down there, you can set his own itinerary. I'm confident we could figure out a way for the breakdown that will get him to Atlanta that's not an airplane. And, of course, Giuliani didn't offer any public testimony as to what it is that keeps him from flying. Maybe the fact that the flight attendants will not give him unlimited booze cart service. I don't know. So that 13-hour drive, Giuliani will be making. Of course, he was busy last night, barking and grunting about the search warrant. Wouldn't want him to miss any of the action. Let's see. He said it by tweet, of course. The FBI and DOJ leadership is abused of the awesome power of law enforcement as if the U.S. has no constitution and is a fascist police state. Even with documented evidence of crimes endangering our national security, they continue to cover up for the Biden crime family. Oh, for pity's sakes. What's this cover-up? Well, don't worry. It only exists in Rudy Giuliani's head. And let the prosecutions begin. A Nebraska woman by the name of Jessica Burgess, age 41, is now facing 5 criminal charges. 3 of them felonies. So-called investigators in Nebraska-stan have charged her with helping her 17-year-old daughter get abortion pills to end her pregnancy and then burning and interring the fetus. The 17-year-old daughter is being tried as an adult. She's facing 1 felony and 3 total crimes. Now, all of this happened, bear in mind, this is kind of important, before Dobbs came out. They will be tried in Madison County, Nebraska, the district court there. They've entered not guilty pleas. A 22-year-old man is accused of helping the 2 women bury the fetus. This is the chilling part. It involves that word that we're trying to get around, trying to not use. The Guardian reports, according to a search warrant affidavit, the Norfolk, Nebraska Police Department launched an investigation in April after receiving information that Burgess's daughter had miscarried and buried the fetus. Then a hard-working detective obtained her health records, the daughter's, and made a medical determination that he was incompetent to make as a detective, that she was nearly 6 months pregnant and was expected to deliver in early July. And in a line from the Guardian article that is absolutely chilling, it is unclear how the detective obtained the teen's medical records or exactly how the tip was sent to police. Now, the mother told the police that she delivered, that the daughter delivered a stillborn baby that was confirmed by an autopsy on April the 30th. The baby was stillborn. And so mother and daughter showed the pigs, I'm sorry, the fetus police, where it was buried. And a 22-year-old man who helped, daddy, maybe, said they tried to cremate the fetus before they buried it. So the charges of removing, abandoning, or concealing a dead human body, a felony, as well as concealing another person's death and false reporting. Those 2 are misdemeanor charges. Among other things, these pigs, and I have no problem calling them pigs. This is porcine behavior. They got a search warrant to look at the Facebook accounts of both women. There, detectives found messages that suggested, that word doing a lot of work, Burgess had bought abortion pills for her daughter and instructed her on how to take them. One local news outlet said, the daughter talks about how she can't wait to get the thing out of her body and reaffirms with the mother that they will burn the evidence afterwards. That was the claim of the detective who somehow or another, with other crimes going on in Nebraska, found time to pursue this. So that's when authorities in Nebraska started piling on. They charged Ms. Burgess with additional felonies for performing or attempting an abortion on a pregnancy that has passed 20 weeks and performing an abortion as a non-licensed doctor. Here we go. And, of course, yesterday, the appropriately named Pete Ricketts, the governor of Nebraska, he actually said he won't call a special legislative session to further restrict abortion access because there aren't enough votes in Nebraska to support a 12-week abortion ban. That, according to Reuters. Expect more of this. You know, America has had for quite some time a pill problem. You know, fentanyl, hydrocodone, oxycodone, etc. Lortab, Xanax. Look for, in the fairly near future, look for a problem with possession of abortion pills. There will be raids, you see, in places like Alabama, South Carolina, Hell, the South Carolina legislature is trying to make it illegal to even to say the word abortion. Trying to interfere with interstate commerce and regulate what can be discussed on the internet. Because, you know, nobody quite does sedition like the state of South Carolina, But God knows, Alabama's working on it. Handmade America. This is an egregious case. But there's that old maxim they teach you like the first day of law school. Hard cases make bad law. Well, the hard case had nothing to do with this. This was just bad law in the first place. And if the baby was stillborn, it wasn't a person. Or was it? Thanks to our magnificent, most puissant, dread sovereign Catholic supreme majesties, it probably was. You gotta wonder if the baby was perhaps dead in utero. What kind of medical care was available for the 17-year-old young woman? Monsters. Not the mother and her daughter. All these Republican fascist assholes. As to Giuliani flying... Lee in New York says, of course he can fly. But only at night. He has to be in bed before dawn. Ah, okay. And Ron and Raleigh noting, Rudy's infirmity. He has bone spurs. It worked before. Then what, they? I guess they explode at 30,000 feet or something? Yeah. Jesus. Told you it was going to be a Titanic Tuesday. And it's summer. And people would like to get out and do summertime activities like, oh, I don't know, go to the water park. Wow. Wichita, Kansas, last summer. You remember when... Remember when Jaws came out, if you're of a certain age? Or maybe Jaws 2, don't go back in the water. Well, that's not just at the beach. Last summer in Wichita, Kansas, according to a federal study from the CDC, 21 people contracted Shigella bacteria and 6 others got sick with norovirus when they went to the splash park at Tanganyika Wildlife Park in Goddard, Kansas. Another 36 people reported gastrointestinal illnesses after visiting the splash park, but they didn't have any lab tests. At least 4 people were hospitalized. The CDC surveyed 404 people who visited the splash park last year between May 28th and June 19th. And yet, they turned around and let the park reopen after they, upgraded their pump and filtration system and passed a health inspection. The director of the park said,
I didn't find the study useful, although I'm all for analyzing data to learn from the past. It offered little advice for other splash parks besides ensuring you have signage that states don't swallow the water. And it offered no additional insight into the investigation. Regardless, it did affirm that there have been no additional incidents because we took the situation seriously and found ways to enhance our system and processes so that the splash park's safer than ever.
Shigella and norovirus? Yeah, I think I'm just going to keep on... I'm going to keep on staying home. I mean, well... It reminds me of what W.C. Fields said when they invited him to come in swimming in the lake.
Fish fucking that.
Yeah. No. Matt in San Francisco says, I believe Giuliani. I've seen him leaking at a garden supply store. I can't imagine what altitude does to him. It looked a little like motor oil, didn't it, Matt? Oh, and it's time to it's time for us to meet the Republican nominee for governor in this year's race. Meet Tudor Dixon. She recently won the Michigan primary, and she will face off against Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And, of course, being a Republican, she's a real Lulu. In her victory speech, she said... And this is a quote.
This is going to be an epic battle between a conservative businesswoman and mother and a far-left birthing parent and career politician. It's time to elect a real woman in Michigan. What is a woman?
Oh, God, here we go. And once again... It's kind of like the athletic stuff. It starts with rules against a marginalized community, and then it spreads. I think, what is it? It's 3 Olympic-level athletes now who are cis women, whose testosterone levels are deemed to be too high, even though they're not juicing or anything. It's just how they are. And they just happen to all be black. And now, in Michigan, this two-door Dixon, God, I'd hate to see the four-door version, two-door Dixon, I'm sorry, she sounds like a blues artist from the Mississippi Delta. And now, on her famous one-string guitar, here's two-door Dixon. And now she's questioning the womanhood of a white cis woman in the form of Gretchen Whitmer. Well, I'm sorry, Joy, up in Ann Arbor. You're, you know, obviously you're getting Alabamaized as well. You're doing everything you can to keep it from happening. And apparently the maggots just ate it up because they did. They gave her the nomination. Gretchen Whitmer did not take the bait. She said, I'm going to stay focused on delivering for the people of Michigan. That's what I want to be judged on, you know, some of the ugliness that's been a part of that primary, and obviously it's going to continue into the general election, doesn't serve the people of Michigan. But, well, when one maggot candidate goes there, others will follow. That led Michon Maddock, a co-chair of the Michigan Maggot Party, to describe Tudor Dixon as, quote, younger, smarter, and hotter than Gretchen Whitmer. You know, because Tudor Dixon's 45 and Gretchen Whitmer's 50. Yeah, I don't even know at 50 if you're marriageable anymore. But Mallory McMorrow, who's a state senator there in Lansing, and whose remarks I played on this program a few months back, giving hell to one of her maggot colleagues. Mallory McMorrow, senator, said, Michon Maddock immediately made it a beauty contest. When you got the co-chair of the state GOP... announcing we've got a younger, hotter Gretchen Whitmer, it feels to me like this has set us back as women. The fact that we finally get to a point where it's woman versus woman running for the most important office in our state, and it's reduced to women as sex objects, it's disgusting to me, and it hurts. Maeve Coyle is a spokesperson for the Whitmer campaign. She said, there are clear contrasts in this race on the issues that actually impact Michiganders' lives. Governor Whitmer's moving Michigan forward by lowering costs for families, making record investments in education, and fighting like hell to protect the right to choose, while Tudor Dixon has committed to criminalizing abortion without exceptions and gutting public schools. Because that's a true statement. Tudor Dixon says that abortion should only be legal when the mother's life is at risk. No rape, no incest, no health of the mother, and she also says that Gretchen Whitmer caused suffering, Tudor Dixon does, suffering, during the pandemic, you know, when she wouldn't let the maggots out to go mow their snow. And the Alabamaization is real. It was this earlier this year in the spring when Senator Lana Theis, I don't know, a maggot, did an invocation to open the session saying that forces were indoctrinating children with lessons on sex, gender, and racism. Mallory McMorrow and two others got up and walked out on her ass. And that's when that horrible creature accused her of being a groomer who sexualized children, and she got blasted by Mallory McMorrow, who described Theis as having a hollow, hateful scheme. Okay. Matt in San Francisco said, Tudor Dixon and the Dickettes, open doors open at 8. Is that the Fillmore, Matt? Well, the Fillmore's not there no more, is it? Tudor Dixon and the Dickettes. No, it's not. Sadly, it's not spelled. Ralph, sadly, it's not spelled T-W-O-D-O-O-R.
but it's T-U-D-O-R, and that looks like Tudor to me.
I don't know. Maybe her one man and one woman, God-fearing, upstanding, etc. marriage husband's name's Four-Door. Got a little kid named Hatchback. I'm sorry. Lee in New York. Two-Door Dixon gone wild? What? Oh, I had no idea. This is from Crooks and Liars. No, it's going to work a lot better if I use a better platform. Sorry for the delay. Whatever in the world could this be? Oh my God, Two-Door Dixon is actually an entertainer. The things you learn on this program. This is the intro to a TV series Two-Door Dixon was in called Transitions. Really? Transitions? And she's worried about the... Oh, well, she's... she is curiously attired, let's put it that way. And she's got a bottle of liquor and some shot glasses. And she's wearing a zippered dress whose zipper she pulls down seductively. And wait, what? And now she's doing her lipstick. Oh, no wonder. No wonder what's her. And there's a close up of her breasts. And there's a guy getting up out of bed with a t-shirt on. And a woman being grabbed by the hair. And Two-Door Dixon just used apparently a katana to slash the throat of the woman in the pinstriped zippered dress. And what? Oh, there's vampires involved. Jesus, it's Caribou Barbie all over again. GOP nominee for Michigan governor, soft porn edition. Soft vampire porn. As Francis Langham noted at Crooks and Liars. Turns out Two-Door Dixon is also her vampire soft porn name. Transitions, Episode 7. Starring the Republican nominee for governor of Michigan, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, it's same thing. I see the woman with the zippered dress. There's a dark, curly-headed guy casting glances, and we're back to the shot glass again. And wait, is this the whole episode? Nah, it's 56 seconds. That's enough of that. Dadgummit. Yeah, by all means, maggots, vote for the hot, soft porn Republican vampire lady. Oh, she'll suck the blood out of Michigan for sure. I mean, she's a Republican. She knows what the hell she's doing. I'm kind of sorry I saw that, but well, Lee, I'm gonna save that and show that to Annette here in a little bit. Ah, here's the plot summary. Ed Loomis is a man on the streets trying to find his way through life, looking for a new opportunity to redeem himself in society, until one evening he finds himself cornered and in a dire situation for his life. Not believing it, he is killed and brought back as a vampire. This is a story of transition from life to the undead, and its trials and tribulations. Follow Ed and his fellow Klan members. That's Klan with a C. I mean, with a Republican, it's always a question. As they confront the challenges that come within their shadowed society, we all live, we all die. Only the unfortunate transition. And they gave her the Republican nominee for governor. God, it seems like it was only years ago that they were putting the governor's office in Michigan in the hands of an outright racist who was all for continuing to poison Flint, Michigan. I gotta confess, you know, I check my maggot bingo card every now and then, but I did not have softcore porn vampire woman on my card, and more's the pity. Joy, you gotta clue me to this stuff. Republican vampire? Matt asks. Talk about typecasting. Matt'll be here all afternoon. Stay away from the veal and the vampires. Don't forget to tip your server. Two Door Dixon and the Dickettes, Ron and Raleigh, getting in on the act. Says, are they opening for Disco Tex and the Sexolettes? My chiffon is wet. Okay. Now, see, Scott in San Diego, you were complaining that everything was too heavy last night. Well, and here I've got your elephant stories here. I mean, trying. They can't all be that funny, though. Yeah, she got her a Wikipedia page, Two Door Dixon does. She's a true red maggot. She spreads the big lie. Because, of course, she does. How else would she become the gubernatorial nominee for Michigan? She's claimed repeatedly that Nitwit Nero actually won Michigan. She worked in sales at her father Von McCary's steel company. Got diagnosed with breast cancer, then became a conservative commentator on Real America's Voice. Among other things, she has said that Iranian parents are murdering daughters who marry without obtaining parental permission, and has declared that someone using blackface was comedy. In regard to abortion, she said that the health of the mother and the life of the mother are different. She even went so far as to say that a 14-year-old great girl raped by her uncle is what she called a perfect example of an abortion that should be prohibited. A life is a life for me. Tragically, she and her husband, Aaron William Dixon, tragically, they have four daughters who have to live with her nightmare internalized misogyny, which, of course, I have no doubt she has passed on to those four poor little girls. Tudor Dixon. Meanwhile, we have, and I used to be fairly familiar with the criminal code here in West Virginia. Never heard this one before. Eric Charles Liotti of Parkersburg, West Virginia, has been arrested after he crashed his vehicle. No one was injured during the pursuit. Cops chased him. He crashed the car. God knows how many people were put in jeopardy by that. He was charged with felony fleeing in a vehicle. But when inquiry was made of the Jackson County Sheriff's Department, I know Jackson County, they said that he was acting a fool and driving like an idiot and endangering the lives of other drivers in the area. So maybe the pursuit was justified. At least he didn't hurt anybody. And the arraignment for and I always said that if we needed the legislature to do some actual work, and that what we really needed in West Virginia was Article 99A criminal dumbass. Take care of a lot of problems. Did I hear you chuckle? I don't know what Annette's laughing about. But the Jackson County Sheriff's Department said, yeah, he was acting like a fool and driving like an idiot. And so they eventually found him, and dumbass ran. Acting a fool. And meanwhile, in Arkansas, lots of Titanic intellect tonight, this afternoon. You remember we talked about Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags earlier? Jethrine Bodine? Well, she's all pissed off at the newspaper because nobody ever told her the basic law of, never start a war with somebody who buys ink by the barrel. The Arkansas Democrat Gazette printed an op-ed written by Chris Jones. Chris Jones is running for governor of Arkansas, too, against Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags. And Jethrine is upset. Because the Arkansas Democrat Gazette published Chris Jones's op-ed, but then, according to Jethrine, they didn't give her a chance to lay out her edumacation plan. I, Jethrine Bodine, will guarantee that everybody in Arkansas will get plumb through the sixth grade. We will learn how to cipher with nickel squirters. Because I guess what set her off, what triggered her, was when Chris Jones said, when I released my plan, I invited Sanders to participate in this important statewide conversation. Unfortunately, she's still an unexcused absence on education at this time. She tried to send a campaign ad masquerading as an education plan to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, but they took a look at it and said, "Wait a minute. This isn't a thought piece. This isn't an op-ed. This is a campaign ad. Honey, buy an ad." And you know what's terrifying? She's probably gonna win. I hope she doesn't, but she's probably gonna. But nobody does butt hurt like a huckster bee. Oh, and a little bit of good news. Joe Biden's approval rating, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll, and I'm not crazy about polls, but it's up to 40% now, and it has a lot to do with getting shit done in Congress. Between the CHIPS bill for, you know, giveaways for the semiconductor industry and the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 and its accompanying Joe to the Manchin-born climate bomb. Well, he's gotten to 40% again. He got down to 36% approval rating, and that's still 3% higher than Nitwit Nero's basement. In this particular poll, Reuters asked 1,005 adults their opinions, 445 Democrats, 357 Republicans. It's credibility interval, all otherwise known as the margin of error, is 4 percentage points. Come on, Joe. You can do it. As Matt in San Francisco pointed out earlier today, he needs to wear the Ray-Bans all the time, and somebody needs to get him a bottle of cough syrup, a little Robitussin or something. Maybe some Cre-emulsion. Remember Cre-emulsion? And if it wasn't ugly before, it's getting uglier now for the primary out in Wyoming, Stan. Harriet Hageman, HH, ooh, yesterday was 8-8, has a new ad out, and she's accusing Liz Cheney. And she says,
"There's been an awful lot of noise this election. Candidates attacking each other, making things up, desperate for attention. Liz Cheney, she's made her time in Congress in this election all about her."
Now, Cheney has by far the better war chest. But there's all kinds of maggot groups that are operating in Harriet's corner. Ads are running in Wyoming, Stan, saying things like, "President Trump is still fighting for you. He needs Harriet Hageman in Congress." President Trump. And this line, which, you know, if you know anything at all about Liz Cheney, this will just send you into paroxysms of laughter. They sent Trader Tot out to campaign for Harriet, who in an ad for Wyoming Values Pack said,
"For far too long..."
I can't do the Beavis and Butthead laugh.
For far too long, Liz Cheney has bowed to the Democrat elites like Nancy Pelosi. That's why my father and I endorse Harriet Hageman for Congress.
You bowed to the Democrat elites, huh? Liz Cheney had a north of 95% voting record with Nitwit Nero until he decided to commit impeachable offenses. And even after he tried to shake down Ukraine, Liz was right there with him. But there will be no criticism of the supreme leader. Seems like there's another, you know, English is a Germanic language, and there's another Germanic language, and they've got a different word for leader, and whatever could it be? No Robitussin, says Lee in New York. Every variety has an expectorant. I cough more than I get relief. Well, that's good to know. And the idea of Joe Biden half-crazed on a bottle of cheap cough syrup, well, nobody needs that. And there's going to be another vote, by the way, on the 35 cap on patients' insulin costs. It'll come back this fall. Chuck Schumer said they blocked a $35 price for insulin for non-Medicare people. We're going to come back and make them vote on that again. Meanwhile, Republicans said they were gotcha'd over $35 insulin. Schumer went on to say that we got all 50 Democrats. I guess that's a win when you're the Senate Majority Leader and you're a Democrat and you can actually get all of your members to vote, you know, on stuff you want. But added, we did get 7 Republicans. We're going to bring that back in the fall because there's going to be huge heat on Republicans. And now, all of a sudden, Senator Chuckles Grassley said the vote on the cap was not about insulin, it was about damsing... No, it's got to be nasal, doesn't it? Vote on the cap was not about insulin, it was about Dems ignoring budget rules. Dear colleagues, join me in supporting the Collins-Shaheen bill to cap insulin at $35 and enact pharmacy benefit manager reforms in a bipartisan way. Ignoring, of course, the fact that they could have gotten around that procedural rule with a little bit of cooperation from what? Yes, Republicans. And the ongoing competition to be the stupidest person in the United States Senate. Well, Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, he works in the lumber mills there. Trying to be reelected and apparently lives in a yard full of rakes. As I was saying, quack! He's still facing fallout from the comments that we talked about earlier where he said that Medicare and Social Security should be discretionary spending. And now he's desperately trying to defend it, saying, I never said that. I never said I inferred in any way, shape, or form. What I'd like to do is save the programs, and the only way to save the programs is if you take a look at them. And, you know, start cutting. Yeah, tucked into the article is the following. Senate Majority Leader Charles Schumer and Senator Joe Manchin last month discussed increasing taxes on people who earn more than $400,000 annually in pass-through income to extend the solvency of the hospital fund until 2031, but the talks fell through. I wonder why. It's Something tells me it's nothing that Chuck Schumer did. Yeah, Joe couldn't figure out a way to make the bill do something good for people named Manchin. Because those people making more than $400,000 a year, some of them are in fact named Manchin. So there goes that. Well, sounds like a thunderstorm coming outside. His colleague in the Senate, Ron Johnson, Tammy Baldwin, said not only has he made those references, talking about getting rid of Social Security and Medicare, but back when Rick Scott put out his Republican agenda, which sort of abolished both of them and start over, Senator Johnson voiced support for that. Nancy Pelosi's piling on. Her office said on its blog, putting Social Security and Medicare on the chopping block every year is no way to help working families. It's a way to devastate them. Unfortunately, most House Republicans agree with Senator Johnson. So, you know, in the MAGA states, you know, the same kind of people that went to Washington, D.C. in their scooters and had their signs that said, take your government hands off my Medicare. Yeah, y'all go ahead. Y'all give the House to the Republicans and see what happens to Medicare and Social Security. Don't worry. If they do, they'll just keep watching Fox, and Fox will explain that, oh, Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and Barack Obama cut Social Security. Because, of course. And by the way, what's his name? The guy running for governor in Illinois who said, all the Chavids are with me. Well, down in Florida, and we talked about this previously, there is a synagogue there that is suing the state of Florida over abortion laws. Rabbi Barry Silver, in his suit, says that the Florida ban on abortions after 15 weeks infringes on the constitutional right to privacy enshrined in the Florida Constitution, and that it also tap dances on freedom of religion. Palm Beach County, oddly enough, where Mara Lardass is the site of Congregation Lador Vador. And now, the lawsuit, they've filed an amended complaint to add an OBGYN by the name of Dr. Daniel N. Sachs and two Unitarian reverends, a Buddhist minister, and another rabbi. Dr. Sachs sent a text message to NBC News today saying, I joined the lawsuit because I strongly believe abortion is essential health care, and I believe no one should be oppressed by others' beliefs, religious or otherwise. Government interference is based on the religious beliefs of some and has no place in medicine. And he went on to say that they have harmed him personally. My personal and professional stress I'm now under, and I am unable without violating the law and incurring criminal and other sanctions to provide what I believe to be essential health care to patients. Another one of the plaintiffs, and this is actually strategically interesting, is a 42-year-old woman who has a deeply held religious belief. Where have we heard that one before? Oh, slut medicine. Yeah. Hobby Lobby. 42-year-old woman has deeply held religious beliefs that life begins at birth. And that she wishes to resist the new restrictions, quote, despite the law's threat to her and her doctor of criminal prosecution. There's a nice team of lawyers on this. Daniel Furlegger of Pennsylvania, Henry Sword of Massachusetts, and Daniel Ulfelder, who's also running for a Florida Attorney General. Silver also happens to be not only a rabbi of that congregation, but a civil rights attorney in his own right. He issued a statement, Rabbi Silver did, and said, "The law has no rational basis and serves no compelling governmental interest. The only interest it serves is the lust for power of Governor DeSantis, who wants to appeal to his base and become the next president." And there's some truth in that, because just a little bit ago when I opened a YouTube video, lo and behold, there was a Ron DeSantis ad playing to me with my little West Virginia IP address. And, you know, bless Rabbi Silver, his congregants, and other congregations and rabbis across the country, because they think life begins at birth.
You know, because that's what their holy book says.
The other new divines on the suit, retired Unitarian Reverend Harris Reardon, a Buddhist minister by the name of Maya Malay, Rabbi Arthur Waskow, who runs a progressive Jewish organization called the Shalom Center, and they've got a brand new Unitarian minister, Reverend Tony Fisher. He serves a congregation in Greater Naples, Florida. I'm rooting for all of them. Absolutely all of them. I had a note, just to wrap things up here. I had a note... Oh, and by the way, I got a note here from up in Michigan. Oh, this is going to be ugly. Two-Door Dixon is already leaning into anti-trans messaging to go after Whitmer. Shh, let's not talk about that. People don't like the trans stories. I had a note from Joy in Ann Arbor earlier. She had caught a piece on MSNBC. About Texas women with pregnancies gone wrong who had to wait until they were septic before a physician would touch them. If other types of health care were treated like abortion, gotta let that tooth socket fill up with pus before I can do a root canal. There went dinner in the Pacific time zone. Gotta let that appendix burst before I can remove it. Gotta let that blood vessel in your brain pop before I can treat you. Gotta let the gangrene set in real good before I can touch that leg. Gotta let that brain tumor grow a few more inches before I can remove it. That cancer isn't life-threatening yet. We need to let it spread first before it can be treated. And your aorta is clogged, but you'll need to have a heart attack before I can treat you. It harkens back to what Alan Grayson once said many years ago was the Republican health care plan, and he was not wrong. Don't get sick. And if you do get sick, die quickly. Because that's who they are, you know, the party of life. So here we are at the end of a 3-hour filler obster. And hope you've enjoyed it as much as I. I will not know until tomorrow. I don't know. I'm going to talk to the boy after the program whether I'll be here tomorrow. If not, you'll know that I'm somewhere between here and Columbama, Ohio. Thank you to all of our Patreon and PayPal supporters, subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors for your kind gifts. We got down to $800 this evening. That means the fundraising goal tomorrow will be $1,100, and we'll desperately keep crossing our fingers and hope we'll pay some bills. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this long-running conversation. Tell your friends and neighbors. Talk about, you know, maybe mention the program on your social media pages and whatnot, because this is unlike anything that happens anywhere else. It's a great way to get your voice heard as opposed to sitting on hold to say, you know, hello, and then be cut off 2 minutes later. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. It was a lovely evening in the chat room. Thanks for being there, Sparky. Hey, Squeaky. Asa was there for a little bit. Steve from Georgistan was came by. Roger was there. Theo popped in. Thanks, y'all. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way. 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and now a proud union shop. And it looks like I'm probably going to be, for the first time in a very long time, going on the road for Cold River Mountain Watch sometime in September. I'm looking forward to it. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Your second booster. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Keep your social distance 15 to 20 feet. Like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And if somebody comes walking up towards you saying, you know, I'm a real woman and Megan Whitmer isn't one and my name's Two Door Dixon. Avoid that softcore porn actress like the plague. Because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.